Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, The Low Post. It's the number one NBA podcast for a reason. Top executives, coaches, players, and the best analysts in the game. Be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to The Low Post now, as well as The Right Time, wherever you get your podcast. The Right Time with Bomani Jones podcast is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. Only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It's that time of week where we have a guest joining us. Joining us now, him and that damn hairline. Check him out at the Peacock Network. New show, Brother from Another. His name is Michael Smith. Mike, what's going on?
Not much, man. You know, I haven't gotten a haircut lately, so sorry it's not quite as sharp as it normally is.
So your hairline is even more out of control. You ain't even had to trim it up. You got it in all your glory.
Hey, but look, I know you ain't talking about hair, dog. You're looking good with this hairstyle you rocking. I like what you've done with it.
But I can't do yours.
Mr. Vanity Fair. Mr. Vanity Fair.
But I can't cut mine low. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the problem. I either got to stay out here or come all the way home. I got no stop in between. But I ain't going to lie to you. Y'all might be in trouble.
You're just going to be dropping flexes on the gram. Just, yes. You know, you're not that active on Instagram, but I could see your posts increasing.
Yes.
What if it goes extreme and your just get long?
You never know, baby.
Growing out of control.
You never know, baby. Like, we going to see how this goes. Like, the folks didn't know I could do this curl thing. They think I got a kit. It's not a kit. This is how it goes. I got one of them. Have you seen this? They got the brush that's like a sponge.
Yeah.
I had been wondering how these young boys was looking like they didn't give a while also looking like they really gave a
Yeah.
And then I learned it was this sponge.
Mm-hmm. I've seen them.
Shannon put me up on gang.
I've seen them, yeah.
Now, granted, Shannon will never have a haircut that involves doing anything like this ever again.
I'm feeling it.
Shannon, the Jalen Rose radio production.
I mean, I get so much Jalen Rose tweets, and they always about our hairline.
Yes.
All the time. It never fails. If ever I see a tweet with Jalen and me in it, I don't even have to read it to know what it is.
Yo, and people need to remember, y'all did a TV show together. No TV show had a stronger hairline than y'all two up front.
That is the legacy of that program, yes.
Hairlines never lie.
It was a walking barbershop poster is what that was. Number one, number five, right over there. That's what that was.
Yes. Now, Brother from Another, Peacock Network. Tell the folks about it.
Yo, man, you and I probably talked about this privately. Yo, I'm going to take you back to 2011, Bo. When the aforementioned Numbers Never Lie, this is an accidental segue. When the aforementioned Numbers Never Lie was being developed, I told Jamie Horowitz, he asked me, yo, who do you want to work with? I named three people. I said, Jemele Hill. I said, Bomani Jones. And I said, Michael Holly. So I'm about to be 2 for 3. Hopefully one day you will do me the honor. So I can get my bucket list of co-hosts taken care of. But no, nah, man, honestly, I bring that story up to say, I thought I was probably just going to not do this again. I am very happy developing and producing content. I'm more creative, I feel, than I've ever been. But when the opportunity to work with, you know, one of my best friends, godfather to my children and a mentor and a brother of mine came about, I couldn't turn it down. So yeah, we starting in a couple of weeks. Just hung up with the show meeting. Our team is coming together. The loose format's coming together, man. But it's going to be the kind of show that I always wanted to do. And right now in my life in general, Bo, like I'm working with the people and working on the things who and what I want to work on and work with. So, yeah, it's really a dream come true. I wasn't even thinking about it before a couple weeks ago. So it really came about rather fast.
So just to help the people out also, the Peacock Network, that's an OTT setup, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's free, though. It is free. It's going to be on the free channel. So,
is it going to air at a specific time, or can people just get it whenever?
It's going to be both. So the live channel, what they're doing is they're putting a 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. that range, daily sports relevant. So what it'll be is it'll be Pro Football Talk, Dan Patrick, Rich Eisen, and then Brother from Another. It'll still be available on demand, but it'll be live from 3 to 5.
Gotcha.
Monday through Friday, yeah. And then they're bringing me back. Bro, you must look. If that don't tell you that I just love Michael Holly, bro, I'm doing a 2-hour show after being off on the bench for 2 years.
Yeah, and people don't understand The difference between, like, I learned this doing High Noon because we started for an hour.
Yeah.
And then we went to 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And an hour show is much more of an investment of energy and all of that stuff than a 30-minute show. People don't know, man. Like, as much as people might think that they got a certain admiration for Stephen A. and Max for just the fact that they do that job, the fact that Stephen A. used to be out here doing 2 hours of that and then doing a radio show, and like Max is doing that now, that is monstrous. Like, it is
every
things
day
that are harder than they look.
Yes.
Being on television for 2 hours.
It's the mental energy. And that's just when you're on. I mean, you know, Bo, you don't turn it off.
Right.
I mean, because you got to always be up on what's happening, not just in sports, but in the world 24/7. In order to bring an energy, an enthusiasm, and a passion to every topic, you can't take plays off.
Right.
So for that 2 hours that you're on, every topic you got to care about. And
yep.
And then when you stop being on the air, you got to go back to, hey, what's going on? What are we doing tomorrow? And that's 5 days a week, every week, or year round. Is just an incredible commitment. But again, it's easier if you're doing it with somebody. It's the same way I could talk to you for hours. Doing it with Michael, I think, is going to make it that much easier because it's somebody that I would be talking to, you know, regularly for an extended period of time, regardless if we were on TV or not. So
I'm just glad he don't work with them other people no more.
Yeah, right.
I might be able to rock with him now in a way that, you know, I really couldn't for a
That's
little
exactly
while.
That's exactly right. Wait, for real, all jokes aside, could you come on, or is there some like contractual with that?
I guess we're going to see.
Can't hurt the requests.
Yeah, you know yeah, I mean? Yeah. Yeah, okay, yeah, cool. Yeah. No. Right. I guess we're going to see. Now, let me ask you this. This is where I get to turn the tables a little bit, right?
All right.
Because, like, I mean, we could be real about this. People know where we work and the things that have gone on. You know, people have a fascination with the idea of whether or not ESPN is quote unquote sticking to sports, and they feel like, you know, now it's happening less, it happened more. And, you know,
yeah,
people's interpretations be what they are. I don't want to so much argue about that. However, whatever people think about the ESPN brand and thinking it is a bit of a conservative one, there is no more pristine brand out there than NBC, right? Like, you mean
the golf NASCAR.
Yeah.
Tour de France.
Yeah,
Hockey Network.
Yeah. Or just look at how Sunday Night Football is done, you know, and all of that stuff. And again, this is no shade at all to NBC. They know who they are, and they know how they presented themselves.
Right.
To which I say, they gonna let y'all do it though. You know what I'm saying? Like they gonna let you put your peacock out there.
Hey man, that is the question, because I mean, those that have followed my career and those who have followed, to your point, ESPN's evolution over the last several years understand that when his and hers went to SportsCenter, we thought it was gonna be one thing, and very quickly realized it was another. Okay. So when I went into this, that was my biggest question, because I'm not doing it for the money. And my time is more valuable than any amount of money that I could be paid right now. And so I'm just like, yo, is this real? And so far, so good, based on the team and the people who are working on the show. It is very much hand selected. It is very much people who are aligned philosophically with not just our worldview, but also the approach to television. So the answer right now is yes. But I qualify that with, it was a yes before. The difference now, though, as you know, you more than anybody, as you know, is the attitude seems to have shifted, not just in America, but specifically throughout corporate America, where the conversations that you and I and others were at one point vilified for having are now being encouraged by these same corporations and these same networks.
Right.
I mean, I'm only here, quite honestly. I've been chilling for a minute, but George Floyd, rest in peace, God rest his soul, got people like me and others opportunities to do what we've always been doing, but now to do it in a way that is expected and celebrated and encouraged. Yeah, I mean, so far it looks like it's going to be the real deal. And they know, like, look, if this goes sideways, it's like, I'm not going through that again. And they know that. And they've assured me that that's not what this is. And so, again, having Michael, you know, with me is a big part of it. And there's no misunderstanding about what the show is going to be.
It's interesting that you mentioned George Floyd in that, because I think I had actually reached a point over here in the last, like, kind of right before I went on vacation, because, you know, kind of you know more than like the general public does about, I don't know if ups and downs is the right way to put it, but just kind of the different things that I felt, you know, a TV show get canceled, man. Like, it's a thing, you know, when it happens, like
every day, B.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I think I handled it okay, but
you handled
like,
it great. You handled it phenomenally well.
But when your TV show gets canceled, and keep in mind, I was doing a TV show before that TV show got canceled, right? Mm-hmm. So I have been doing TV shows for 7 years. Mm-hmm. Like, if you were to ask, what do? Like, I go do appearances and people are like, so how do we refer to you? And I say, I'm the host of The Right Time. But if you were to ask me like my title, like they don't, mm-hmm. my job is not to be the host of The Right Time. Like, it's something that I do while I'm here. You don't necessarily know like what to say as those mm-hmm. things happen. And so I felt after when COVID hit, mm-hmm. I felt like I had a real value to provide, obviously, because this is a different kind of intersection of thing and that I'm good at. And then George Floyd hit. And not only did I have something to contribute, now I'm getting phone calls from people with good jobs to thank me for what I've been doing. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that I don't want to be sarcastic because I appreciate the fact mm-hmm. that they called. I appreciate the fact that they appreciated. But we all noticed what happened after George Floyd. Everybody else could feel it, too.
That yeah.
The appreciation level had right. gone up, right?
Right. Well, you haven't changed one bit.
Yes.
It's the same yes. thing you've been. Yeah, absolutely.
But yo, after that happened, I guess that was what, June, you know? So we had a couple of months that passed, and a lot of that momentum that I felt that we had hit, and we started seeing the statements from people and folks really going hard on this, it had started to wane, right? Like, it had started to die down over the course, and I think people will make the argument that like the people who thought the NBA shouldn't play because we'll have sports to distract us. And it wasn't really a matter of having sports to distract us as much as at this job, if there's sports to talk about, we're going to talk about the sports. Mm-hmm. But then the Jacob Blake thing happened.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you realize, I think a lot of people realize, you ain't going to be able to duck this. And the NBA players, I think, used it right to put everybody in a position to understand that we're not going to be able to duck this and just run away from it, or it's just going to kind of go away. And it reminds me, I can't remember if I talked to you about this, but there was a researcher at the University of Connecticut who did a story in 2010, and he does like political stability modeling. And he said in 2010, his research indicated to him that in 2020, a whole bunch of factors like rising income inequality and stuff like that were going to come to a head, and 2020 was going to basically be a year of chaos. Like, nailed it. Nailed it. And the other part in the paper is that it wasn't simply that he said the chaos was going to come in 2020, but what he said was that you'd have something like COVID that was like the big thing. Mm-hmm. And then what you'd have after that were a bunch of little fires mm-hmm. that kept popping up. And so George Floyd, relative to COVID, you know, and though they are connected, would count as like a smaller fire mm-hmm. that came up. And then you think you got that one under control. Mm-hmm. And then Jacob Blake happens. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so it feels to me, they give it like the awareness that people have or whatever it is. Yo, man, police ain't stopped killing people. Like, right. this is not, we ain't heard about them all. Like, right. some stories.
I'm about to say, these are just the ones we know about.
Right. Some yeah. stories jump out more than others. Correct. For whatever reason. But this is going to keep going. Like, I'll be honest, I do want to just talk about some sports every now and then. Like, I still enjoy talking about sports.
Yeah.
But this other stuff is here, man. And look, I don't know what the hell November about to be. I'm going to tell you this right now. I don't know if you thought about this. I'm going to make a suggestion for you right now.
Portugal. I've heard Portugal.
Oh, not that. Not that.
Oh, okay.
I ain't gone that far. I ain't gone not that yet. But I'm just saying.
Okay.
November 3rd is election day.
Yeah.
You ain't about to see me at work on November 4th, baby. Win, lose, or draw. I ain't coming. I'm about to be like, you know, you work retail and they got yeah. the book for days off.
Yeah.
And you got to get in to get to the book. And yeah. everybody tries to get to Super Bowl Sunday first.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you right now, you better get to that book and get to election day. Because no matter what side you on, there's going to be some people you don't want to see.
Take cover. I said to somebody the other day, I don't know which is going to be met with more, it's hard to say chaos. It's already chaotic, but like, either way, it's going to be some to your point.
Yes.
Because old boy ain't leaving willingly. You know, we know that. Nothing would surprise me at this point. All-out civil war of some kind would not surprise me at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's madness. But no, I feel you, man. And it's like, going back to your question about the show and if it's really going to be that kind of show, one of the things we want to make sure we do is not only talk about, because traditionally in sports, it's like, if you were given the leeway to talk about the intersection of sports and politics, it would have to just be that.
Right.
So-called politics. It would have to just be that. It had to be, you know, Kaepernick taking a knee or LeBron tweeting about it or something that gave you license or permission or made the powers that be comfortable with you talking about this. Okay, this is a sports story. When in reality is like, we are all holistic, versatile human beings with varied enough interests to where it's like, we should be able to, if you want to talk about music, I mean, nobody's better at music than you are. So if you want to talk about music, if you want to talk about so-called politics, you want to talk about race, you want to talk about movies, you want to talk about sports, all of that's of interest to not just us, but our viewers. And it's, and stick to sports. By the way, I wish I could just find the person who says stick to sports first and just really show him. I'm like, so wait, show him or her. Like, so wait a second. Donald Trump is blatantly using the Big Ten to campaign in Big Ten country.
Right.
He's trying to win Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Ohio by bringing back Big Ten football. He is blatantly using sports as a campaign tool. And y'all ever had the nerve to tell us to stick to sports? But anyway, I digress. Yeah. Point being is just like, you know, I think what's exciting about this moment now is like, yeah, I'm with you. Sometimes I just want to talk about whether that was a reputation-changing play for James Harden. But man, it is, and I've gone back and forth on whether or not to be bitter or frustrated about the fact that I'm old enough to remember 2 years ago when I like I'm the poster child for this not being popular to be discussed. But yet now I'm like, yo, it's nice to see people appreciate you. It's nice to see the voices that have been amplified after having been overlooked or ignored for so long, not just what you're saying, but who's doing the saying. It's nice to see that these conversations are happening more regularly. This is what I struggle with, though, Bo. You know, and what I appreciate about the walkout, or the wildcat strike, as they call it, is it wasn't so much for me, at least, about what the result of it was going to be, or whether or not it was an action with the purpose or with the plan and so on and so forth. To me, it was about people just as human beings say, yo, I don't feel like working today. This ain't working, so I ain't working. This Black Lives Matter on the court, the stuff we putting on our jerseys, these PSAs, clearly ain't working. So I ain't coming to work today. I'm taking a mental health day.
That is exactly what it was.
Well, because as you said, like, it's going to keep happening. Because we just found out about the gentleman in Rochester that happened before George Floyd.
I don't even know about that.
This literally came out yesterday. There's a gentleman in Rochester that the police put a bag over his head and kneeled on him, and he suffocated. This was before George Floyd. The New Orleans Saints put Jacob Blake on their helmet, and it was a gentleman down the street in Lafayette that the police shot. So it's like, this ain't going nowhere. And so walking out on the games, people are like, well, what is that going to accomplish? For me, that's not what it's about, because as we've all said, this ain't our problem to fix because we ain't started.
Yeah.
But that said, as human beings, yo, man, I'm not going to work under these circumstances, you know?
Here's my question on that. What's going to happen if they do it again? And I don't raise that as like some hypothetical, like just some, you know, just kind of what if, right? I raise that because the actionable thing that the Bucks did was they got the owner in there and they got on, and he got on the phone with the governor and they had a session to talk about that bill up there in Wisconsin.
Right.
And then didn't do nothing with it.
That's exactly right. What you know? They did gavel in, gavel out, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
They didn't even really entertain it seriously.
Right. You know, like, and so these cats are like, wait a minute now.
Yeah.
You know, like, we did this. We showed y'all that we meant it. We did everything y'all telling us to do. Because that's the thing I think that gets lost in this is use your platform, use the access to the people that you got, all of that stuff. They did all of that. You could say, I mean, and honestly, nobody lost anything with the games because the games are going to be played. The games are always going to get played. But they did that. They made that move. They did what you want people to do under those circumstances. And then that bill got up there and they ain't do nothing with it. And that's kind of why I look at the move that they're making with the voting and opening the arenas, which I think is unquestionably a good thing, right?
Right.
But a superficial thing. And I say that it is superficial because the issues with voting, it's not simply about getting people registered. Getting registered isn't enough to guarantee that they actually gonna let you go in there and vote. And so these cats made a real strong move. And in good faith, they came back. Now, granted, the Republican Party of the state of Wisconsin did not make any agreements with the players. I understand that, right?
Right.
But they made a move in good faith, and they came back, and they got their faces spit in.
I want to talk to you about two things, awareness and solutions. The thing that bothers me about the so-called conversation is that it's really not a conversation. It's not a discussion, because my humanity is not up for discussion. A conversation suggests that there are two sides to this, and there are you know, a varying degrees of thought that is subjective. This ain't subjective. No conversation to be had. No discussion to be had. Stop killing us. Full stop. Black lives matter on a court or on the back of a jersey or a PSA. Like, this ain't about bringing awareness to this. Everybody knows what's happening. They're just okay with what's happening. A lot of people are okay with what's happening. What's interesting about the solutions, we did everything you told us that we're supposed to do. When everybody says, like, what's your plan? What action steps are you taking? What are you doing? By the way, they're not interested in the answer to that question, nor are they doing anything for their part. But inherent in that question is what they really are saying is, what are you doing? Even though we've already showed you throughout the history of this country that it doesn't matter what you do, we will never see you as fully human, as our equals. But what are you doing to uplift your people so we don't have to feel the need to police you and kill you? When they're saying, what are your steps? They're like, what are you doing in your community? How are you stopping so-called black-on-black crime? What community engagement are you doing? How are you educating your people? What are you doing to stop the abortion rate in your community? All these dog whistles they blow. That's what they want the players to do. They want the players not to upset the system. They want the players to get in their communities and fix their people so we don't have to be afraid of them. So they're not interested in actual reform. They're not interested in the dismantling of this inherently systemic racist system. They're interested in players making their people better so that maybe we can feel better around you. Because what they've done is it's like, okay, have state-sanctioned violence against Black and brown people. Then instead of condemning the state-sanctioned violence, let's condemn the protests, which turned violent thanks in large part to outside agitators who are now coming to defend property instead of people. So now let's condemn that violence and in turn justify the aforementioned state-sanctioned violence against Black and brown people. The short way of saying that is it makes you feel like, I don't know what we can do. Because it shouldn't be on players to sacrifice their livelihood and their passion in order to, again, fix a problem that they didn't start. But it does come with that obligation. But when they do it and they actually flex that muscle, and like you said, and it's just spit back in their face like, yeah, and it's like, well, now what?
Yeah. And like, that's just what I felt like that exact thing was. They're just like, fine then, right? Like, we got you back on the floor, whatever it is, and then we keep it going.
Well, that's what Black Lives Matter is to me at this point, Bo. Because Black Lives Matter, it's not comfortable. It's not uncomfortable anymore.
No.
It's trendy. It's a brand. Black Lives Matter brought to you by AT&T. It's a brand at this point.
Yeah, but I think it's a brand, but I also think that...
And I don't mean from our standpoint. I mean from a corporate perspective. I mean the people who are now comfortable saying Black Lives Matter, who 6 months ago were not.
I agree, but I want to be very careful when I talk about that, because I think it can be easy for us to discount that the fact that it's comfortable to say now is a testament and a big win to people who worked really hard to stress that point, you know? So like, it doesn't mean but so much to me that white folks will now say Black Lives Matter, but it means everything to me that people fought for 5 years and created a world in which white folks can say that Black Lives Matter. Like, it's a very simple statement that shouldn't have been hard for anybody to say.
100%.
But I want to make sure to give all the props in the world to the people on the ground, to forcing people to reckon with this at the very least, right? Because we know how much people take in without processing. And if people take in Black Lives Matter, and that is built into them to perhaps override some of the things that they're going to be bombarded with, not all of them, but some of the things they're going to be bombarded with by the larger system and environment, then like, it's a win to me that people do that. This is the thing that I
asked you're right about that.
From general, like, white folks here. And this is something I just don't think is talked about enough is, hey, man, we got to stop letting people slide for being absolutely stupid. And what I mean by being absolutely stupid is, I was talking to a friend of mine who was telling me about conversations that he has with his in-laws. And they live up there in Wisconsin, and some little town in Wisconsin. And buddy living up there is like, everything in his town is shutting down at like 7-8 o'clock, and they boarding up. And they're not in Kenosha, just to be clear. Not like particularly close to it. But they had heard that there were people who were traveling into Wisconsin so that they could go into the small towns to test stuff up. Word! For real? You telling me that people are going to go to towns smaller than Kenosha? In order, why? For what? But people, they fall for it. Like, there's so many stories that are like this that people fall for, and we cut them slack on it. And at some point, we just got to grab them by the shoulders and be like, yo, that don't sound stupid to you.
Yeah.
Like not at all in any way. That doesn't, like, sound ridiculous and stupid. But those are the kinds of things that people play on in order to push larger agenda, is people just flat out saying stupid things. And you're just like, yo, man, where are we going to go if this winds up being the game? And so I want to see how this continues with the NBA, because also, you know, they got their fractures and rifts among the players, because the players are humans. It's not fair to expect them all to get along on every single thing. LeBron, and the way he is trying to position himself in this and the way that he ultimately wants to look. And then you got other people with the ways that they want to look. And then you got young boys that are probably a bit more rowdy, you know, when it comes down to this, compounded by the fact that them dudes are in that bubble. Miserable, man.
That's interesting. So is it almost like, from your observation, and I think you're a lot closer to it than I am, is it not dissimilar from the dynamic that was playing out between, or among, I should say, Cap and Malcolm Jenkins and Michael Bennett, that dynamic that was going on in the NFL?
Yeah.
Is a similar thing kind of playing out in the NBA?
I think it's similar, but in a very, like, almost ironically different way. And so one thing that I peeped from the NFL situation, there was a certain deference that Colin Kaepernick expected for what he had done and where he had been in things, right? And he thought if there was going to be a leader, you know, of an NFL movement, it should have been him. Now, never mind the fact that he wasn't in the NFL at the time, which I think is a complicating factor. But he thought that he should be the leader. Malcolm Jenkins wanted to position himself as the leader. And then you wound up, you know, and Eric Reed, not even in between, but, you know, but you wind up in that situation. LeBron James wants to be the leader of this, but he doesn't want to be the leader because he's the dude that went out and paid the cost like Colin does. He wants to be the leader because he's LeBron James. And so when these guys make this move in Milwaukee and don't run it by him,
he's like, y'all ain't check with me.
Yeah, exactly. Because he's LeBron James. The other thing is, Colin, when all of this started, was also much younger. He was still in his late 20s. LeBron is in his mid 30s. You know, it's going to be a different game, but it is similar just in the sense that you're still going to have a bunch of people that have different interests and different things they want. And the leadership of it is going to, like, form itself out, and you're going to figure it out. But it's not always going to be smooth, and it's unfair to expect of them and to ask of them for everything to be smooth.
It almost, another comparison, it almost feels like, you know, the Democratic House.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, here's Nancy Pelosi, but wait, here's AOC in the squad, and here's that.
Yo, but it just, also just happened with the Republicans, where the Republicans got the White House, had the Senate.
Yeah,
I think they had the House at first, also, right? They had they everything.
Yeah, they flipped it at midterm,
and then was like, damn, now what? And and there were a lot of reports. Like, I think even Paul Ryan talked about this at the time, where he said, yeah, we know how to be the opposition party. We don't know how to be the ruling party. Mm-hmm. You know, because once you become the everybody, when they're the opposition,
we got to have something to fight about.
But they're all unified in the fight.
Exactly.
But now that y'all are winning, you realize that y'all is a coalition of interest. Y'all is putting enough people together. And now that y'all are on top, each individual you into y'all. Is trying to get their piece. How do I get this? How do I get that? Well, I don't like this. Or the personal favorite, I don't like that dude. Right? Like, all of these things come together, because in the end, again, these are still human beings. And these are the things that happen when human beings get together. And so, man, this is going to be a lot.
And I love what you said about Black Lives Matter, wanting to recognize the people who have literally fought and died to get us to this point. I guess the thing that just, and I'm struggling with it, man, both on a personal level, on a professional level, it's just struggling with that question that's haunted a lot of us, which is like, well, where y'all been? You know, like, why did it matter now? And it didn't matter.
Yeah.
They mattered more post George Floyd and post Jacob Blake than they did for Ahmaud Arbery.
Yeah.
It's just like, why?
Yeah, but you know, I ain't got time, myself personally, I ain't even got time to worry about that, right? Like, okay, y'all late. I've been late on stuff.
But not at the expense of literal life or death. And the other thing that pisses me off.
Well, I don't know about that.
Okay.
At least I can only speak for me personally, right?
I think I already know where you might have caught me. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. But, like, you know, matters of life and death, for example. Like, I know that I've been late and come around in the last few years to understanding the plight of transgender people. for example.
Well, I was just going to say gay people, because to tell you the truth, yeah. I think back in our youth.
Yes, no, no.
And the words we used to use, yep. And the way we used to talk.
Yeah.
You know what? Thank you, man. Because you know what? You just, and this conversation just enlightened me, but I'm not going to be hypocritical, because you just enlightened me on something. Because even when it comes to women,
yeah,
I always thought I was in tune. I always considered myself a feminist before it was a word, you know, or at least a word that we use. But no, there are ways that I've grown and matured when it comes to women that I didn't in the past. So no, you're right. Yeah. I mean, we've been guilty of being late, but I guess for me, it's also just the focus on the tip of the iceberg. You know, I think I was talking to Tony Reale and I told him this, man. I'm like, this extreme manifestation of racism that we're fixated on, and rightfully so, which is police brutality, it's like, that's just life. The liberty and the pursuit of happiness part, we don't even talk about that.
Yeah.
Because there are lives that the police and the system destroy on a day-to-day basis. They may not physically kill them. And Jacob Blake, I don't mean to trivialize, but Jacob Blake may be an example of a physical manifestation of that, where it's like, okay, yes, we saw him get shot. He's not dead, but he is paralyzed. How many people are literally and figuratively paralyzed, right, in terms of their ability to move and operate in this country on a day-to-day basis, whether it's in corporate America, whether it's in their own neighborhoods, their environments, housing, economic opportunity, education opportunity, or lack thereof? It's like, so I guess that's the thing that kind of just like grinds my gears a little bit. It's just like, you know, you got people are saying Black Lives Matter and end racism. Are you talking about racism, or are you just talking about police brutality?
Right. But see, and this is, that's why I don't spend much time thinking about them being late.
I hear you.
And the reason is because we got so much farther to take them. That's right. Why. Because, like,
that's,
I don't
real.
Know if you saw this, but so I saw this report on Tom Gores. He is the owner of the Detroit Pistons, and his equity firm owns the largest prison communications and money transfer company that is out there. And look, the thing we know about prisons, and like once prisons get private in particular, businesses care a lot about growth. And how do you make a prison grow? Right. By filling it up.
Inmates, population, right, bodies.
We got to get more people to come stay at the Alcatraz Hilton, right? Like, how do we get more people in the Alcatraz Hilton? The only way to do it is to send them to jail, right? Yeah. How do we save money at the Alcatraz Hilton? It's to provide less to these people. Like, you know, these are the only ways that this can happen. We're going to go up and down the list with a lot of these owners. It's not just simply going to be about what political campaigns they donate to.
What are your actual interests? Yes.
Did you see where Dan Gilbert took Quicken Loans, or I don't know if it's Rocket Mortgage now, whatever the official name is, but he took it public and suddenly became worth like $30 billion?
Mm-hmm.
Yo, he got his money subprime lending. Like, that's when his company took over, was all of these things, the owners that are putting Black Lives Matter on the floor are far more complicit on stuff. The DeVos family, however you say that, in Orlando, the Amway people.
Yeah, the DeVos, yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, we know what Betsy's doing, yeah.
Yeah. And go look at her brother, go look at where all this money comes from. And that's why I'm like, I can't even worry about the fact that y'all got here late, because baby, you got here and I don't even think y'all understand how much is cracking now that you have gotten here. I don't even think you understand.
And that's the part I definitely feel you on. Like, no, you're right. You've made me feel, I feel you on the timing of it. Better late than never, for sure. But that's the part that I say to him is like, yo, when you are talking about systemic racism, do you, and if you're an ally in this fight against systemic racism, do you understand, whether you're an owner or my neighbor, do you understand that the overhauling and dismantling of this inherently racist system will come at your expense?
Yeah, yeah.
If this equity and this gap is going to be closed, you got to give something back.
It's somewhat zero sum. It's not entirely zero sum, right?
Yes.
But it's somewhat zero sum. But I'm looking at the players. If I'm behind the players, right?
Yeah.
Here's the thing that I would do my best to remind everybody of. Y'all got guaranteed contracts. And that is very important. You have guaranteed contracts. So Blake Griffin, for example, I'm just throwing him out there because he plays for the Pistons, right?
Yeah.
Why can't Blake Griffin say, I got a problem with that? Because, you know, I get in general the idea of, obviously you don't want to bring smoke to your boss. You know, you may have a good relationship with him or whatever. Like, you try to avoid that sort of thing if you can, right? Mm-hmm. I 100% get that. But if y'all trying to get it done, your best path in getting this done, I think, is going to involve shaming owners and forcing them to be honest about where they put their money. Because the where they put their money has more of an impact than what they put on the floor in the bubble. There's a value in saying Black Lives Matter on the floor, but these cats are then being able to go back and kind of hide behind all this other stuff. That's why I say, like, I look at the players, and this is where I look at LeBron, and I'm like, look, you know, registering people to vote and all this is cool, but you got the ability to wield the real hammer, which is you can put these owners on Front Street, and you're not putting them on Front Street for nothing they hiding. You're putting them on Front Street for, like, in their worlds, everybody knows about this stuff.
The downside of, in this moment, and this is all part of the frustration, the downside of divesting their interests in some of the things you're talking about that run counter to the very messaging that they've now put front and center, or as the case may be, at center court, is greater than the downside of pissing a segment of your fan base off.
Yeah.
By proclaiming that Black Lives Matter. I mean, look, the bottom line is, whether it's anytime a protest becomes acceptable,
it ain't a protest no more.
All that stuff that they're signing off on is like, okay, why are you giving in on this so easily? So, no, I'm with you, man. It's like, and that's part of the reason why, while again, I'm saying two things that may sound contradictory, because I don't want to put a pressure that, again, it's not our problem to solve. Unfortunately, we deal with the problem. We're the victims of the problem. That said, to tell an NBA player, because, I mean, you and I still going to work, to tell an NBA player, hey, you go to work. Exactly. So, but that said, I was rooting for them. If I can say that, tell me if that's fair. Yeah. I was rooting for them to not come back to play, because the only thing that's going to get these people's attention for real is their money. That's all they understand.
Yo, I think I know exactly how you felt about this. And this is, you ever heard of Gil Scott Harris' song, Johannesburg?
Yeah.
You know, they tell me that our brothers over there defined a man. We don't know for sure because the news we get is unreliable, man. Like the whole thing, right? But the whole point of that was, hey, man, I hear they over there getting it done, and I love to see it, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of how I feel about this. Yeah. They tell us over there our brothers are refused to work in the mines. They may not get the news, but they need to know we are on their side. Like that's that. Right. That's the kind of feeling that I had about it as I saw it, is that y'all made a bold move, Jack.
It was.
To be like, hey, man,
we out.
We ain't playing.
Right. Which they have every right to do.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yes. It's like it's like I'm calling in sick, and I'm calling in sick and tired.
Yep.
And I'm okay with that. That was like that was the biggest, because once you just keep showing up in spite of this, then implicit in that is that it's okay, or it's okay enough for us to keep pushing forward, or that you're okay. Man, if nothing else came out of this bubble, first of all, I just can't get into the basketball. I just can't, because it's actually the opposite. Like, if I could pivot it for a second to the pandemic, it's the opposite of a diversion from the pandemic. It's a constant reminder that we're in a pandemic, because there are freaking virtual fans.
Yes.
It's a socially distant bench. I look at it, and I'm like, damn, we're in a pandemic. So it's like, but that said, man, the conversations about mental health that have come out of this are fantastic.
Yes. Because we're putting them in like the most foreign situation in the world.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And I tell you this, man, I'm going to just say this. I normally don't give out intellectual property here, but I don't feel like anybody's really going to be. I don't really feel like anybody going to be in a true position to make this happen.
Well, maybe you should put some whole music on. Put some whole music on.
No. I want the people to hear it, right?
All right.
Like, one thing I take pride in, and this is why I get kind of mad sometimes at people when they say I talk about race all the time, is I do talk about race relative to my peers probably more than the median person at my job, right? But ain't nobody got better jokes about this than I do. You know what I'm saying?
I might talk about it.
I got laughs for you. You know why?
Because
I ain't scared. And I know I'm not being racist. And as much as I talk about, again, how these are still all just people, one thing we got to remember about every revolution like this is, call this revolution, but every move like this, them votes ain't unanimous, baby. There's always one or two people.
Yeah.
There's one or two people that's going way harder than everybody else.
Yeah.
And there's one or two people that's kind of like, fellas, I don't know about this one.
Right.
Like, so for example, I want to know when the Bucks were in the locker room talking about it, who was the one to be over there and look at, what's my man's name? What you think about this, Pat? Hey, man, I just, I'm just taking it all in. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like we got that situation with Pat. Ain't no telling where exactly the Lopez twins were.
You just want to be a fly on the wall for the real conversation.
Yeah.
That unified statement on the outside of the locker room is one thing. You want to hear a real conversation.
Yeah. Yes, Ersan Ilyasova. I would love to know a little bit more about, like, I don't know that dude. He might be down with Erdogan, right? Like, I don't know. He and Cantor don't necessarily see Turkey the same way, right? But I know at some point, if I had to bet on anything in the world, okay, there was one dude in there, one dude who was like, hey, man, we about to do this. They ain't going to talk to me like this no more. Uh-uh, we done had enough. It's time for us, my brothers, to make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
At which point, Chris Middleton had to look over and be like, Dante, if you don't chill. Sit down, fool.
You and Dante, man.
Yo, Frank Isola was told me once that he saw Dante. I forget where he said he saw Dante DiVincenzo, but he saw Dante with a hoodie on. And you know what the hoodie said?
It did not say white Dante.
Africa.
Oh, my God.
I told you, man. I peeped this early. I have no doubt in my mind that Dante believes that Black Lives Matter. None whatsoever.
I ain't got it.
Yeah. Like Pat Connaughton over there in the corner. I really don't know which way this is going with you, partner. Dante, at the very least, I know he think he know what side he on.
That's absolutely right. Yes, no, the conviction that you have about it, you know in your heart of hearts. I bet you would bet that Dante thinks Black Lives Matter more than some Black people think Black Lives Matter.
I would be more disappointed to find out that Dante didn't believe that Black Lives Matter than I would to find out that Eric Bledsoe did not believe that Black Lives Matter. It would be a sadder situation for me were to go down. Now, all of these, like, somebody was in that locker room.
Like, Dante is your best brand since CV Ain't Blind, in my opinion.
I believe it is.
In my Bomani brands, it goes, it goes Zone is for Cowards. it goes white Dante and Stevie Ain't Blind, because I do believe Stevie is blind, so that's why I put that third. But
hey, man, you know, we all entitled, you know what I'm saying? But now, like, every one of these, there's some dude in the back that's like, are we gonna get in trouble? Right? Yo,
I got a question for you. Who called his wife and asked permission? Who called his wife was like, hey, just so you know.
Yeah. I just wanted to tell you before it got on the news that we not gonna play. Or how about this one? What if Gordon Hayward had played on the Milwaukee Bucks? Like, because keep this in mind. Milwaukee is like the most segregated city in America. Like, I don't have a great handle on how the locals internalize this. But you live a little closer to this than I do. How would it go if the Boston Celtics decided they wouldn't play in the game? I don't think they'll let you play 1-on-5, but I bet Gordon Hayward would have been out there for tip-off.
You know what, though? Not to ruin the jokes, but I'm going to tell you, man, who I knew he was special.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not to trivialize it. I hope it doesn't sound that way. But if I could talk about a star turn in this moment.
Jaylen?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Jaylen's a sharp dude who spent a year in Berkeley. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I mean, I heard this about him coming out, you know what I mean? That he was wise beyond his years and Players Association and so on and so forth. And I'm like, wow. Every time this dude speaks.
Eddie Hooper.
Yes.
Yo, he was just like, yo, man, I just needed that one dude to get up out of here, man.
That one dude. Yeah. Has he spoken since being vindicated?
No. And don't talk him up. And I don't think he was vindicated. And here's why I don't think he was vindicated. The Wildcat strike had an impact because it was a Wildcat strike. If they were not playing games, it would have had no impact. It wouldn't have done anything. Mm. This thing just would have happened. They gave more attention to this by being there.
Yeah.
That's why Kyrie was wrong. But you haven't heard.
Could two things be true at the same time, though? Can he be wrong about the process? Because you're right. This process was more effective. But the premise of, yo, there's work to be done. And I think you even said it earlier in this conversation. The momentum kind of was waning just a little bit, and then Jacob Blake happened. So I think he was right about that part of it, or at least his feelings were right, if the feelings can be right.
And he may be doing everything in the world, but I'm asking you, what are you doing? Because I ain't seen none of it.
No, I got you. I know what I mean?
That's my thing with Kyrie. Like, I think that people took it as a vindication when it wasn't, but I have to tell you this. I have to tell you this before we go. Kyrie has a new head coach.
Wait, I thought not Pop. I know it ain't Pop.
It ain't Pop.
That was rumors about his house.
Yeah, it ain't Pop. It ain't Pop.
Who?
Steve Nash.
Man, I'm sorry. My headphones went out for a second. Who?
Steve Nash.
Did you say Steve Nash?
Steve Nash, 4-year contract.
Is the head coach?
4-year contract. Head
of
coach,
the Brooklyn Nets.
Oh, yeah, Brooklyn Nets. Sorry, yes.
That's always New Jersey to me, too. I just started saying Brooklyn.
You are at that age now.
Wait a minute. Yeah, I don't know how to. Wait a minute. Hold on. First of all, for some reason, and I wasn't one of these people, but I immediately defaulted to that feeling that we all had when he was that back-to-back MVP, Steve Nash.
Yeah.
That hate that we all bestowed on Steve.
He was cold, man.
He was, though. He was ahead of his time, you know?
It's he just wasn't necessarily MVP cold.
Yeah, but I'm like, wait, is this – how do I feel about this? How do I feel about – I'm fascinated by it at minimum.
My question is, how long is it before he quits? I got to deal with – first of all, Steve Nash is point guard. Kyrie's not about to listen to you on how to play point guard. Like, it's just not going to happen. And they are two completely – different
point
players.
Guard. Absolutely.
We haven't even talked about having to deal with Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
We haven't even talked about all them low spades they got who are pretty good players. Not great players, but pretty good players. And trying to figure out how they got to put up with Kyrie.
But I'm going to tell you what, though, man.
And a pressure to win, by the way.
True that. That's one way of looking at it. But, man, if I'm a first-time head coach, I'm going to just look at it on a surface level. I appreciate everything you're saying. But I'm a first-time head coach with no experience, which is why I go back to the, like, I don't know how to feel about it. It's like, okay, Steve Nash, smart guy, sophisticated guy, obviously knows the game, point guard. I'm sure he'll make a good head coach. But, man, they got a lot of dudes, especially black dudes, that's been paying some dudes that you would think could have gotten this opportunity. But, okay, moving past all of that. All right, it's Steve Nash, whatever. I'd love to give it a shot with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving.
Yeah,
I love to get. I mean, that's gonna be fun. And if it blows up,
I'd rather take that call from the Pelicans. I'd rather get to try to work with that one.
Yeah. But man, that is fascinating. Steve Nash is a head coach.
Yeah.
Of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
Wow. When did that happen?
While we were talking. But
man.
Right before we came on. Remember right before we came on, I was like, you see who's going to be
Yeah.
I was like,
oh,
you don't know.
Oh,
I wanted this moment.
Wow. Steve Nash, head coach, Brooklyn, stand up.
Yeah. Now, the one thing I'll say is you're correct about black dudes who've been paying dues and all that. But there's one thing I recognize about the NBA. Or just, I have no idea who is or is not going to be a good coach.
Like, no, you
I got
never
nothing
know.
For, I got nothing for you on background. I've got no particular path to look toward. I've seen them poor broadcasters.
Cool, because it's to your point about, like, Steve Nash actually might be a good coach.
Yeah.
He has good players. But is he the right coach for those good players? A lot of it ain't got nothing to do with your roster. Or most of it ultimately has to do with who's above you. But your roster could be great. And you could be good, but you ain't right for that team, and vice versa. Your roster could be you could be great, but you can't get the most out of them and they don't give you enough time. A lot of it's just got to do with your front office. But like I said, if you said low spades, that's two trumps right there. That's two trump cards you get to start with. So you know you at least got the big joker and a deuce of spades.
See, I don't know if Kyrie's a deuce of spades. I think Kyrie's more a king of spades.
First of all, I'm just pleased, and maybe it's because, you know, you from Atlanta/Houston and I'm from New Orleans, that you play spades the right way, which is deuces wild. That more than anything lets me further know how aligned we are. Because I can't stand people that don't play deuces wild. So I appreciate that.
Like, it's a valuable card, right?
Right.
But it can still be cut.
So Kyrie is a king of spades to you.
Yeah. And we don't know if Kevin Durant
believes he is the big joker, which is the best part.
That's the thing.
So Kyrie counting that king of spades.
Not only is he counting the king of spades, when he throw that king of spades on the table,
yes.
It could be the second card in the book.
Yes, yes.
Somebody going to cut you.
Yes.
Somebody's going to get you.
Yes, and they're going to slide it on the table real easy and just look off. Like, okay, you thought you had that, didn't you?
Yep.
And your partner looking at you like, yo, you counted that?
like, and when you say, kind of like, when you said you had five,
right,
I couldn't see.
Right.
I mean, I trusted you.
Right. I thought you had, you count the King of Spades if you got the ace or the little Joker. You know you at least got some stuff on top of that to back you up. Like, oh, man, that is.
It is so interesting. And this is one thing about Spades that doesn't really come up is you never get a chance to evaluate how your partner counts books. Right. Like you got to like when somebody tells you they got four books or they got three books, or whatever it is, all you can do really is take their word for it because you never actually see the hand that they've bitten on. Like you think about this. Nobody ever really talks about the individual calculus they use to determine how
calculus
they count
is the
books.
Right thing. This is actually a study. I think you should commission this study because it's almost like handwriting, vision. It's a skill that like I bet you, even though you and I see things similarly, we probably count books differently.
Yeah.
If you put up a hand, we might see it ever so slightly. Who is your go-to Spades partner?
Oh man, it's been so long since I played. It used to be in college, it was my homeboy Lurch, in part, because he's gonna cheat. So I might as well have him on my team. And he dedicated his entire collegiate existence to
running Spades.
Playing Spades. Yeah. Like, I know he ain't got no degree from the college, but I know he got a degree from the game room.
He at least got a reputation.
Man, I had another homeboy. This dude was waking up at 8 o'clock in the morning to get to the game room by 9, but couldn't make it to class. He was good at Spades too. Like Spades feel like something we should all be good at, and some people just ain't.
That was I tell you that my wife has many qualities. She does not know how to play Spades. I married a black woman that don't know how to play Spades.
Yeah, but she from up there, right?
Exactly. That's why I let it slide. I was like, you're from Massachusetts, so I understand it. I mean, I get it. You know, it's still kind of weird. I get it. And it's something that people don't understand. You can't teach it. You can't, at a certain age, you're incapable of learning how to play Spades. That's like playing Madden at age 40 and be like, okay, I'm going to take up Madden. Like, nah, man, if you ain't grew up with this, your reflexes just ain't there. It's like when it comes to like Spades, you can't teach an adult how to really play Spades because like you said, counting is something that you just gotta like, it's almost like a language that you learn. And yeah, you may pick it up, you may go Rosetta Stone and get a crash course in Spades, but you ain't quite gonna have the nuance down. Speaking of which, my favorite recent Spades story, went to All-Star Weekend in Chicago, and Dwayne Wade puts on a fire Spades tournament.
Yeah, I went to, I think in New Orleans I went to it.
Yeah, Taco Fall, because it reminded me of it because you saw two of his teammates taught him how to swim. Taco, he just tapped me, man. Most innocent thing ever, man. Made me a bigger fan of Taco. He just tapped me on the shoulder because I was playing. I forgot who I was playing against. Might have been Tatum or something. He was like, so how do you play? I was like, let me show you, big fella. I gave him a quick crash course on it, man. It was such a nice moment.
You know, the underrated thing about that party, it gave me a something I just never considered. I'd be kind of feeling a little bad for the young NBA dudes, right? Like the Taco Falls of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, you're like 21, 22 years old. There is no party that is age appropriate for you that you should also be at. Like you should not be there with the 22-year-olds that are here for All-Star Weekend. But I remember at that space party once I saw Miles Turner there. This is in 2017, I think. 2017, 2018. I can't remember what year. But I saw Miles Turner. Dog, he didn't have nothing to do, man.
All he had in common was that he was an NBA player. Other than
yeah,
that,
he's just like 21 years old. Right? Like, what? Like, what's he supposed to do? Go over there and start hanging out with Melo? Melo doesn't even know who he is.
It's like my 14-year-old daughter, and I mentioned her because she just walked in. It's like my 14-year-old daughter sitting down at the grown folks table while we talking. Like, look, I know you feel like you understand what we're talking about, but this ain't your place. Go back upstairs.
Yeah. I respect Taco for asking you how to play because I imagine that quietly, like, I guess I'm just at that age now where I see guys that age and view them differently.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, this must have been a really intimidating like
environment,
sort of situation for you to be in.
Well, that's why I said it was innocent because I appreciated that he asked because how long he probably wanted to know how to play Spades. He probably wanted to know that for a while, you know, but he just felt comfortable in that moment. Yo, so how you play? Because he's around all these people playing Spades. He had a Spades tournament. Don't know how to play. Yeah. So it's like, but that's him. I mean, you know, literally just learning how to swim, which by the way, I still don't know how to swim. So that resonated with me that much more.
Really? You don't know how to swim?
You didn't know that? I never told you.
I'm assuming your kids know how to swim. Cause
I got a pool in the backyard for them.
Yeah, that's what I'll say.
But I watched them swim. I never learned how to swim, man. Never learned.
I know we got to wrap this soon, but I tell you this. You know why I know how to swim?
Somebody threw you in the water?
No, because I spent my younger days among the revolutionaries. Like, here's the thing about like them hardcore, like the hardcore black folks of that time.
Yeah.
Oh no, white man wasn't gonna drown us, baby. We learned how to swim. We used to do a little self defense. Like yeah. all of that, like that's a fascinating. Like,
wait, you did that? You did that high yacht? See, you've been talking about me doing that high yacht.
I don't know none of that high yacht. That's so long
ago.
Okay. But like, I remember I was reading in Coates' first book, his memoir, and he talked about, and I really hadn't thought about it again after that, but he talked about, you know, like kicking it in similar situations, you know, with the dashikis and all the folks like that.
Yeah.
But that was what they was teaching us, though. Like the white man don't want us to learn how to swim. Nah, baby, they drowning us. We learned how to swim. You needed some more people with names that weren't on their driver's licenses in your life, Michael Smith.
my kids keep giving me because I got in the pool. I just got on the floaty and just like relaxed. And I was, I'm on my birthday. I'm just trying to like, you know, chill. They're like, Daddy, let us teach you how to swim. I'm like, no, damn it. Like, leave me alone. I'm good. You know, so it's just I got this mental block. I think I had like a near drowning experience when I was a kid. At least I had flashbacks to it. And I just never I went to pool. Yeah, look. How many of us go to pool parties but can't swim? Like, I was at the pool party. I was deep at the pool party back in the day, you know, in my trunks and everything, but never got in the water. Yo, man, this was fun. I've heard or I saw when Gabe mentioned that I was going to be on, somebody mentioned like Tuesday. What happened this week? I didn't go back and listen to it. Was it how great was Tuesday? I hope this, basically what I'm saying is I hope we followed up. Well, it seems like it was a great podcast with a good conversation.
Yeah, I think we did follow up appropriately, and it's hard for me to describe Tuesday, but basically, I feel LeBron is trying to position himself as Muhammad Ali of his day, and I think it's fairly obvious that that's what he is trying to do.
That is enough of a tease, not that I needed a reason to go back and listen to The Right Time, but that is enough of a tease for me to go fire that sucker up.
Give it a run. That's Michael Smith, brother from another, Peacock Network, 5 to 7. What day are you starting?
I'm trying to prolong that as much as possible. I'm supposed to start this month. I'm trying to push it back as best I can, but we'll keep you posted, but it should be in a couple of weeks.
All right, brother from another, check that out. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. Gabe Bassani, Tarika Foster handle everything behind the scenes. Thank you guys. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.